1998. This is tape 2, side 3. Interview with Barry Paris, again at his home. Mary Harrison will be the recorder this time, and Gabrielle Dinman is the interviewer. Barry, last time we stopped with Tony Curtis, and that was very exciting. But this week we're going to start with Stella Adler. Is
aren't
that okay with you?
Aren't you going
to? Now tell
me
something.
It's fine with me.
It's fine with you.
You're
good. Say one more thing. It's National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project. Okay, Barry. You handed us the bio preface that you wrote, 5 Hours with Stella Adler. Will you tell us something about
it? Yes.
Tell us who she is.
Okay. Well, Stella Adler is simply the greatest acting teacher and coach in American history, certainly the 20th century. She started out with, well, more importantly, first, she is the daughter of Jacob and Sarah Adler, the founders of the American Yiddish Theater and the New York, really the founder of all Jewish theatrical professional activity in New York. It was said that at one time, and I think I say this in the preface, that no curtain went up in New York without an Adler behind it. They were certainly not just Yiddish theater performers. They were Broadway, they were everywhere. The Adler family was extremely important in acting and in the early days of film. Anyway, later Stella became involved with Lee Strasberg in the formation of the group theater, which was the first theater to produce the plays of Clifford Odets and Mark Blitzstein and a lot of other people. But she split with Lee Strasberg over the Stanislavski method, which she claimed that he had distorted and corrupted, which he in fact did. She went to Europe, found Stanislavski personally, spent time with him, had her life changed by the experience, came back and founded her own acting studio, which produced such people as Robert De Niro, Marlon Brando is certainly the most famous, Harvey Keitel, Meryl Streep, on and on. Whereas Strasberg's idea of the method produced people like Marilyn Monroe, who tended to commit suicide at an early age. It was Adler who corrected the wrong notions of Strasberg about sense memory. And then it was also Adler who founded a branch of her studio on the West Coast. There's a capsule biography of Stella, and the bottom line of the book is that her stepdaughter, Victoria Wilson at Knopf, was my editor at Knopf, and had been asking me for years to help do Stella's book of editing her 3,000 pages of lectures into 2 volumes, one of the Europeans and one of the Americans. And finally, in 92, I think, I went out and talked to her and fell in love with her. She was 90. And we talked about our plans for the book and agreed to do it. And it was going to take about 2 years, and I left very excited and exhilarated. And Stella died about 4 weeks later.
I read that, Barry, and I also read that your icebreaker was the Odessa part. Will you say a sentence or two about that?
Sure. I'll use the thing as a cheat sheet, if you don't mind. Because I want to get it exact,
yeah,
because
right.
Her words are so wonderful.
It is very beautiful.
It's very beautiful. This woman is the most dramatic, on and off stage. And when I went out there, the real purpose of that first meeting was to see if she liked me.
Yeah.
We're on page 2,
sure.
Yeah.
Very bottom.
Very bottom. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, I got to give you this. So she's talking for a long time. I wasn't saying much. She was trying to see whether she liked me, right, and wanted to work with me. And she says, "Well, I just did an interview in London, TV interview. My opening line with them was, I'm a Jewish broad from Odessa. Well, that says it all. I'm one of the few people in the theater who says, I'm Jewish. I'm sick of the denial. I'm deeply understanding of being a Jewish child, a Jewish woman, which has given me my talent and my standard. So in London, I had the opportunity to do an hour on TV and say, I'm just a Jewish girl from Odessa. Do you understand me? My parents came from there. My grandparents came from Odessa. I'm so proud of it. So at that point, she kind of paused a minute to catch her breath, and I had been quiet for a long time, very respectfully, because one doesn't interrupt Stella Adler. But now seemed like the time I was going to take advantage of her pause to play my trump card, and I said, "Guess what? My grandparents were Jews from Odessa, too." And at that point, her eyes got big, and the smile left her face, and she held her hand out like a traffic cop saying, "Halt." And I thought, God, what the hell did I say? I must have said something to upset her. You know, I just was riveted to that hand. And she said, "Stop. Don't make me cry."
I think that was very, very...
The actress, huh?
Funny. An actress, yeah. That was real.
But for real. I know Yiddish theater in America and why it was here, but do you know any of the history of it in Europe.
Oh,
when
Europe.
It began, yeah. How did it begin? And Stanislavski and all that.
Ah.
Like, briefly.
Briefly, yeah. Yeah, tell me how much. You want the 2-minute version?
Well, whatever.
Okay.
But I think that's interesting.
It's very important.
Yes.
But it's a very big, long story. But okay,
I'll just give
you a minute.
That's okay.
I won't drag it out. Stanislavski, of course, is much later and not Jewish. He's in the 19 teens, probably. And he's with the Moscow Art Theater in Russia, in St. Petersburg, and in, later Leningrad and Moscow. Anyway, the more important question is about the Jewish theater, which there was no one in Europe. It was, there were Jewish theatrical activities all over Europe, especially in Germany and France, and those would be the most important countries. In Austria, in probably from the 1860s or 70s.
Were they in Yiddish?
Usually, yes. The performances, certainly in Germany, they would have been in Yiddish. The main ones were in Germany and Austria, so yes. Yiddish was the main thing. They were scattered all over. And also, fascinating, there were at least two Yiddish Jewish film studios that produced early talkies. And one of those was in Germany, and the other was in Russia. And they produced some wonderful film. And there are also American films in Yiddish from around that period that no one knows or has seen.
The cowboy movies?
No, they were like domestic dramas. Jacob Adler was in one or two of them. And they were very popular. There were enough Jewish immigrants in the United States from Central Europe, and almost all of them lived in New York, to support an entire Yiddish theater. And it was founded, I think, around 1901 or 2 in New York. And from the long-time Jewish tradition, intellectual tradition, literary tradition. It's a short step from literature to drama. And the plays that they did in New York were especially heavy in the Russian, because there are a lot of Russian Jews and Russian Jewish writers. So does that answer your question?
I think that's good. They had a television program about the Yiddish theater. It was many years ago. It was fun.
A documentary.
And some of them were very dramatic. And they really emoted and rolled their eyes. So what exactly is the difference between the Stanislavski method and Strasbourg?
And Strasbourg.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main thing... See, everybody thought they were interpreting Strasbourg correctly. It was like the Bible. It was like Moses gave people the Bible, and then everybody fought over how it was to be interpreted. No, Moses gave the Ten Commandments, didn't he? Well, you know what I mean. And anyway, Stanislavski had worked with Chekhov and revolutionized Russian theater, the Moscow Art Theater, by basically introducing realism. Chekhov was the main playwright whose plays he worked with. Three Sisters, Cherry Orchard, Uncle Vanya. Prior to Stanislavski and the method, and you certainly see it in films, the dominant style of acting, theatrical acting, was very emotional, very rather exaggerated, stylized, mannered. Stanislavski said, that works if you're doing Shakespeare, that works if you're doing 19th, 18th, 17th century plays. The 20th century is the century of realism. The 20th century, in terms of playwright, actually the late 19th and 20th, is Ibsen, Strindberg, and Chekhov. They are the ones who revolutionized theater and make it from the old extravagant style into realism. So you have to have a new style of acting, and that has to be the method, which is complicated, but basically it emphasizes reality. Strasberg, who claimed to be the interpreter of that theory, picked out one aspect of it, which was called sense memory, which and made that the main theory of his idea of the method. As Stella said, an example is, he'd handed her an orange one day and said, what does this remind you of? What does this orange remind you of? And she looked at it and said, it reminds me of an orange. What he wanted was, this reminds me of my mother's breast, or this reminds me of my, of the moon and on a February day. But you were supposed to, in Strasberg's idea, take that and see what it produced and then use that thought for your character. And Stella didn't believe it, went to Stanislavski and basically got the answer. No, I tried that for a while. This is Stanislavski talking. But I decided it wasn't really valid. I threw it away. It's not legitimate.
That's good.
So there it is in a nutshell.
Okay. Now this book about Stella Adler will be published soon?
Yes, it's going to be, volume one is done. Volume one is the, I had to take these 3,000 pages, separate them. First, they're a lecture, they're transcripts of lectures from 30 years. Volume one is Ibsen, Strindberg, and Chekhov. Oh, do I say that in there? And volume two is The Americans, Odets.
Okay, well, that's good.
And so volume one will be out in, to answer your question, from Alfred A. Knopf in April of 1999. And will be bought by 11 people. But it will be a prestigious
prize.
But
you're going to give me one.
1999?
1999, right. We're in 1999.
And Knopf commissioned you to do.
Yeah.
Or asked you to do. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say about the theater before we move on?
About Adler?
Yeah.
I could go on too long. So, no, you.
You
have anything...
No, this will be an hour.
Yeah, you could... The preface says it all, I think. Well, it doesn't say it all, but it says my personal meetings with her. Let me say one other thing about this woman. This is the most extraordinary woman and Jewish artist, intellectual. I mean, the word Jewish I put in because that's what we're talking about. This is probably one of the two or three most brilliant American artists in the 20th century. In our part of the 20th century, and very much underappreciated, and someone who is well known in New York and not outside of New York, and I would love in general to have her memory and contributions preserved, and the fact that she was so proud of being Jewish and that the Jewishness is so important to her and her family makes it even more important.
What about her brothers?
Wonderful brothers, Luther Adler and Jay Adler, her brothers. She and Luther fought all the time. Luther was a major, not a major, but a significant character actor in American films, but also a great stage actor. They performed together a lot. They were legendary for their fights off stage. They would go on, they would do a beautiful performance and then hate and fight and yell at each other constantly. It was a great, grand, raucous, noisy family and relationship.
Stella
Mary? Yes, very importantly, her first husband was Harold Clareman, who was one of the co-founders of the group theater and a major critic and playwright. Clareman, C-L-U-R-M-A-N, and the love of her life. She talks about him a lot. The second husband was Mitchell Wilson, who was Victoria Wilson's father. My editor, Victoria Wilson at Knopf, her father was Mitchell Wilson, the writer, who was a science writer. And Stella made the incredible remark that I think is in my preface, that she loved Vicky. Vicky is my sister, she said. I took away her father, and it was a terrible thing to do to a girl, but she forgave me. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any more questions, Mary, about
theater? Well, I just want to Stella Adler. Why was she underappreciated? Could you kind of elaborate on that?
Well, she was underappreciated because she was underknown. Her, of course, the theater It's like those drawings you've seen in the New Yorker, the map of the United States with Manhattan filling three quarters of the page, and then the rest of the country, it gets smaller. Theater is New York, basically, and maybe Chicago and L.A. And people know, Americans are, especially since the 20s, are obsessed with film and not theater. And so the theatrical tradition in general has not been very well known outside of New York. And certainly the Yiddish theater one is not, even less, because that takes a Jewish community, and they're only in the bigger cities, right? So she was also not... I was going to say she was not, she didn't have, she had a huge ego, but she didn't self-publicize the way Strasberg did and others. And she didn't take such credit for her students the way Strasberg did. You know, Strasberg was always getting mileage out of Marilyn Monroe, and his daughter Paula Strasberg would always appear with Marilyn on her movies and parade around and make her presence known. And Stella Adler didn't do that. She had too much dignity to do that.
Did she work in films at all?
She made three movies. One was The Shadow of the Thin Man, a sequel to it was William Powell, mm-hmm. but it was before Myrna Loy. So Stella could have been the Myrna Loy in the Thin Man series, and she was great in that movie. It's the only one of hers that I've seen, and it's excellent. But she didn't like movie making. It just wasn't. She was theater. Theater. She needed a live audience. She needed to do a show consecutively in the way it was written. She couldn't handle the fragmented way that films are made, a scene by doing the last scene first, and the set here, and she was theater.
What other two movies?
The other two were, I wonder if they're in here. That's a good question. They were, one she starred in, and I have a good clip of it on a documentary. Yeah, I don't know, I have Shadow of the Thin Man. Well, I'll find that out for you. Oh, Toast, it's called Toast of the Town.
Here it is, wait. Here, are these things?
No, that's...
DuBarry was a Lady?
These are the two that she was associate producer of. DuBarry was a Lady, and Madame Curie. She did music, she then did some producing for a while at MGM.
Yeah, and one with Judy Garland.
Those were the ones she produced, yeah. But did not appear in.
I see. So she did have...
Oh, yeah, she had a Hollywood connection. It wasn't major, but it was. She was involved.
Her brother Luther was impressive.
He was. You saw that picture of the two of them that I had.
So, what did you think of Strasberg?
Well, I never having met him or interviewed him, you mean of his theories, of his method. I'm highly partial to Stella Adler. I would tend to agree. She's the one that met and knew and spent time with Stanislavski. So I think she is right. But also, as my piece says later on, toward the end of her life, in his life, Strasberg, somebody asked him, whether it was true or not that his... let's do a pause 1 second here, and I'll find that.
Okay.
Her biggest problem with Strasberg was everything. This is quoting Stella. It was his approach to the play, the meaning of the play, the character, the atmosphere, which in his hands was dull, without humor or aliveness, sense, memory, personal experiences, all that. I didn't want to remember the way my sister threw up. I told you the orange. Years later, Strasberg basically admitted that Stella was right and that his techniques had little to do with Stanislavski, and he was unapologetic about it. And this is a quote from Lee Strasberg. He said, "Well, if it's not his method, it's mine."
Right. Okay. Now, Larry... I'm looking at your biography while I'm talking to you, and you have many publications other than film and theater.
Yes.
And I'm looking here at Art and Antiques, and I'm looking in your dining room, living room where we're sitting, and you have many collections of many things. Where would you like to start?
Oh, God. Well, in order of importance, we should start with the art.
Okay, please tell us.
Now, where to start? My tastes run to surrealism, strongly Haitian art, primitive or naive, depending on which word you want, and certain of the geometric abstracts, such as Spalatin and Vassarelli. But also the surrealist primarily, Dali, Haitian art is what I truly fell in love with, and the paintings that we're looking at on the wall, except that the walls are being painted and all the art is strewn around and it's down, but you saw it before when it was up.
Right.
These are Haitian canvases. Most of them, about 80% down here, are Haitian canvases, and they are astonishing in the variety of color and composition and also political content, some of them. Go on forever about Haitian art. That was why I went to Haiti the first time, was for Art and Antiques to do magazine. I was a contributing editor to do stories on Haitian art. But then I fell in love with the people and started to learn Creole. And the Melons, Mrs. Melon liked some of the pieces that I wrote. This is the good Mrs. Melon. Gwendolyn Melon.
I was gonna say
which Mrs. Melon?
Gwendolyn
Melon, the wife of Dr. Larimer Melon. And these were the two who founded the hospital in the middle of Haiti, the L'Hôpital Abbé Schweitzer, the Albert Schweitzer Hospital in Haiti, and lived there 40 years and spent their lives improving the health of that country. And Mrs. Melon is still there doing so. Dr. Melon died a few years ago. I just saw Gwen Melon a week ago in Boston. She got an award and has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, which is wonderful, which she richly deserved. And she asked me to do the book on Dr. Melon in the hospital, and so I went down 3 or 4 more times to Haiti and spent a lot of time with her and did that, and I'm way off the subject of the art.
But that's not on your list of publications?
No, because the book is to be published, ironically, almost the same time as the Stella Adler book, but by a different publisher. It'll be out in I think, May of 99 from a new company called Public Affairs Books, which is a part of, distributed by Harper. And all of that, just from the question about the art.
Well, say that, my question.
That was a good question.
When were you in Haiti?
This book is important to me. Good. I was there 5 times, the last time about a year ago. I was there 91, 2, 4, 5, 7. The first couple times to do the art stories for Art and Antiques, and then the last 3 or 4 to spend time in Deschapelle, which is a little town in the middle of the country where the Melon's Hospital is. And it's an amazing place. There are so few, you know, Haiti has 7 million people, and 3,500 of them are white. That's 3,500 out of 7 million. So when you go to Haiti, Port-au-Prince is like New York. That's a big city. But if you go outside of Port-au-Prince, especially up into the middle of the country like Deschapelle, the people, like when I walk around at the outside, the little kids will stop on the pass and they'll point and they'll say, "Blanc, blanc, blanc." They are just so astonished to see a white person. And I just really fell in love with them, as the Melons have, the good Melon, and the people who run the hospital. So I always enjoy going back. Plus, one is treated with, in the most royal fashion. I don't mean you know, extravagant, but I mean just sweetly and nicely by both the people and Mrs. Melon there. So I really enjoy going there. It's a spiritual place. It's based on Albert Schweitzer's reverence for life. You know, Dr. Melon, the whole thing started when Larry Melon read an article in Life magazine about Schweitzer in 1947, when Melon was 40, and decided, "I should do that. I'm going to become a doctor." At the age of 40, he didn't even have a BA. He had quit Princeton, dropped out of Princeton. He had to go. He went back to Tulane University to get his bachelor's degree at the age of 40, began med school, finished at whatever, 46, had Gwen go down and start the hospital construction. And while he was finishing his internship in New Orleans, and then when he graduated, they moved down there, and this was like a life. Paul on the road to Damascus in the Christian mythology. He changed his entire life based on this article about Schweitzer, and they became close friends and corresponded. And he spent his entire part of the Melon fortune on that hospital. It's a wonderful story.
It is.
It's unlike anything I've ever written. It's the only book.
So you will write that you are.
That's written, and it will be out in the spring.
What's the title of it?
It's called Song of Haiti.
Song of Haiti. Okay.
If you wait 1 second, I'll just bring you.
Then I'll turn off. Here we go. Barry, you say you've been 5 times to Haiti. How long do you stay each time?
I usually stay between a week and 10 days, sometimes 2 weeks. And I split my time between, well, mostly stay at Deschapelles. Mrs. Mellon always sends a car for me because it's difficult getting to Deschapelles. It's difficult getting to Haiti.
Thank you.
You go to Port-au-Prince. Anyway, then it takes forever to get to Port-au-Prince, and then you have a 4-hour truck ride to get up to Deschapelles, which is in the middle of the country. So I go there, and then once I'm there, I usually stay there most of the time. She doesn't trust Port-au-Prince, so I never get out of her clutches too long, but then I go down there for a day or so in Port-au-Prince and do the art galleries.
Okay. Now, when your first trip, you were commissioned to write an article for Art and Antiques about the art, right?
Correct.
And what is your background that you were commissioned to do that?
Well, here's some examples of the Art and Antiques covers that I've done. My background in art is simply a self-taught, self-educated. I have absolutely no formal credentials in art of any kind. My credentials are in film and music, but I'm a great art lover, and my credentials are that I say so, and I educated myself about Haitian art. Did you notice the magazine store today? Today's Post Gazette?
Yes.
This is very important. This is my friend Bill Ballendorf,
yes,
who is the person who first took me to Haiti.
Oh, really?
And introduced me to the artist. He is a fabulous Haitian art expert. This is William Ballendorf of Highland Park, who has a Haitian art gallery.
Right here on Craig Street.
Mm-hmm, uh-huh. Macondo. Right. And he took me, and he's the one that taught me about Haitian art and got me hooked on it when I did that story for Art and Antiques. And I, since then, have studied up on it quite a bit because you can't do an article for Art and Antiques without having it, without knowing what you're talking about.
That's today.
Just today.
I have that.
And that canvas, it's astounding. Oh, the artist. Myrna, where's the little Zeffirin
birthday?
Zeffirin, Franz Zeffirin, who did this painting.
Yeah.
I met and spent a lot of time with in Haiti with Ballendorf. And he was here on my birthday, and Bill commissioned a little birthday
piece. Oh, how nice.
And this is also his piece.
What a nice birthday.
It was amazing. I've never had a commissioned work.
You have one on your...
Voté Paris Paris, cient ans en main. It's in this funny mix of Creole and English. But, I mean, this man is amazing. And this little painting is typical. These are voodoo gods of the water, Agua.
Lovely. It's oil on canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on canvas.
I mean, it's astonishing work.
Uh-huh. Barry is talking about the newspaper... article is in today's paper, which is July 2, 1998, and we'll put this in the archive.
Okay.
Now come back, please.
Okay. Managed to lose
me. I'm very bossy. Now, on this cover of Art and Antique of November 1998, which hasn't happened yet, November 1998? 88. Excuse me.
That's ancient. That's how long I've been doing stuff.
There is a cover of Beautiful Losers, the high art and low comedy of campaign memorabilia. And I notice on your walls, besides Haitian art, lots and lots of memorabilia, campaign memorabilia, and also portraits of presidents. And maybe not presidents. Please explain that to us.
Happily, yes. That happens to be another one of my odd collections that you asked about and that I never got around to telling you. But actually, probably the oldest collection. From the 60s, I've collected political campaign buttons, American presidential material. Kansas was the home of Alf Landon, and my friends and I used to go up there and spend time with Alf and try to get him to give us campaign buttons from 1936, and he did. And so I have a huge collection, about 3,000 pieces of very rare political campaign stuff beginning in the 1850s. And Art and Antiques had me do this cover story in conjunction with the 1988 presidential election, using a bunch of my collection pieces as the art. And it is art. It's also politics. But it's political art, and some of the pieces are astounding. And the pieces that they ran in the magazine, Art and Antiques, were the best. And it got a lot of response, and it was as a result of this that they, in another piece, they asked me to be a contributing editor. And that led to the Liz Taylor Peregrina Pearl story. This story was about Hollywood Jewels, and this is the cover of Art and Antiques from October 1992. And of course, it was great fun to interview Elizabeth Taylor.
What's she like?
Wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And to trace the history of this pearl from the King Philip III of, or IV of Spain through Richard Burton's purchasing of it for her. Elizabeth Taylor is one of the truly sweetest people in Hollywood history. And it was very cooperative, and that's why I like doing these.